Greetings, conversationalists. Welcome. I hope you had a fantastic weekend. It is Eric Erickson here across the United States. The phone number, 877-973-7425. If you want to be on the program, as always, text Eric to 33777, E-R-I-C-K to 33777. You can get the show notes, the live stream, the podcast, all that. I want to step into a conversation with you through a roundabout way, because we're there. Every 4 years, this happens, and I want to transition into the conversation. I identify as a conversation. I want to transition there by talking about Dan Orlovsky. Dan Orlovsky is an NFL pundit, commentator, analyst for ESPN. The other day, he commented on social media, he supports girls and girl sports, the defense of girl sports. Herb Street has done the same thing. Orlovsky was vilified immediately for having done so, and he deleted his tweet. And in his explanation for deleting his tweet, he said it didn't reflect the views of his employer, ESPN, which is currently going through a round of layoffs. Now, I saw that he had done it, and my first thought was, I knew he was one of us. He kind of just in his comportment gives away. This is a believer. You see it in some people just hold themselves out as they call it the peace that transcends all understanding. That this guy seems to just be a nice guy. He's got four kids. I've heard he plays golf at that Ohupi Match Club I want to go play golf at. He seems like a fine guy. I was impressed. This guy spoke up. But I turned on Twitter, and my goodness, he's being vilified by conservatives for having deleted the tweet. Some of you right now probably thinking, why'd you delete the tweet? Well, let me explain. You know, there are radio stations in this country that won't put me on. Very explicitly have said so, because I talk about faith on the radio. They don't think it is a good thing to do in conservative talk. I am advised regularly to stop talking about my faith on radio, and it kind of defines who I am. I'm not going to try not to be too preachy all the time, but I can think of one station very specifically that has flat out said will not put me on, given that I talk about faith, and I know there are others. But I'm not in danger of losing my main job. Dan Orlovsky is a football commentator in a world where sports programs are downsizing and laying off. He works for ESPN, which just went through a round of layoffs, fired or laid off one lady who people suspect was actually laid off because she was vocal about girl sports. And the reaction from people on the right is to vilify Orlovsky for deleting his tweet. A friend of mine on Instagram, and he'll hear me and know we had a great exchange about this, that called him a coward for doing so. And I just said, look, neither you nor I, and for those on Twitter, the mass pile on Twitter of people attacking, we don't walk in his shoes or live in his world. He's got a target on his back now for having said what he said, and both sides are firing at Dan Orlovsky, the left for having said what he said, the right for having deleted what he said. We don't live in his world, and when you feel embattled, grace is the first thing out the window, your sense of humor and grace. God bless him for saying what he said, and I don't blame him for ducking having said it. He's got a target on his back, and the remarkable thing is how people are now out to get him from the right because he's one of us, identified now as one of us on this cultural issue, and yet because he deleted the tweet, he's got to be vilified. Good luck getting the next person to pop up and say they're with us. Good luck with that. Very, very, very missional. Someone says they're with us, deletes the tweet because doesn't want to lose their job, doesn't want to come under pressure, and your reaction is to vilify them and attack them for doing so, as opposed to, well, welcome aboard. God bless you for identifying yourself as one of us, and we'll pray for you because we understand you're going to get targeted by the left now. It's not very missional, not very graceful for people to attack the guy for you don't live in his shoes. You know, everybody says if it happens to me, I'm willing to be the martyr. So should he. except you're not the martyr. You're going to have your job tomorrow. You don't have the wife and kids he has or the life he has. And you're willing to say, I'm going to be the martyr, knowing you're never going to be the martyr. So he should be. And you don't live that world. It frustrates me so much. But the point here, and the reason I segue in with this particular topic, is this happens to groups that feel embattled. They lose their grace and sense of humor, and they lash out at others who are otherwise on their side, and in the process harm their own cause and discourage others from stepping forward. I raised that because we're at this point. Back in 2012, when Mitt Romney was running against Barack Obama, I did as I always do. I supported the Romney team, but I wasn't afraid to criticize them. In fact, I did so on this radio program. I did so at the time I was on CNN, and I got a massive pile of hate mail from my audience saying, you can't criticize Mitt Romney. You've got to stop this. You need to be a team player. You need to be quiet. You're helping the other side. By daring to suggest Mitt Romney did something wrong, you're somehow helping the other side. The irony is, this weekend I got an email from a guy who came up in my email account because in 2012, he had emailed me about Mitt Romney complaining that I was insufficiently loyal. And guess what? I'm now insufficiently loyal to Donald Trump. I need to get on the team. It's amazing the number of people who use the phrase, get on the team. If you have listened to me long enough, you know I'm not a team player. Nor do I view it my job as to be a propaganda agent. There are plenty of other talk radio shows that will be propaganda agents to tell you exactly what you want to hear and how you want to hear it. That's not me. I find it boring. I find it rote. I find it predictable. I do not find it entertaining in the least. But we're at this point, and there is actually a commonality between many of these people. They're all much older than me. And they're all of the view that this is the last election. If we don't get this election right, we're going to get communism. And for many of them, given their ages, this probably is their last election in reality. They're going to be dead within the next 4 years. And they think, we got to get it right this time. I'm old enough to know that in every election, going back to the 1960s, people have made the case, this is the last election. If we don't get it right this time, we're going to have communism. We're going to have something. The end of America. I used to fall into that belief when I was writing a red state. By God, you better go show up or this is going to be the end of the country. And yet the country's still here. The only people who aren't here are the people who said it was the end of the country if we didn't vote. And then they died. And yeah, it was the end of the country for them. Pooping their depends, scared about the future of the country. Right? Nobody else really believes that. And I need you to understand, you may truly believe, you may, and I don't want to be belittling or insulting to you, you may truly believe that it is the end of the country. Now, we're certainly, if Kamala Harris were to win, going to get stuff we don't like. We're going to get a lot of stuff we don't like if she wins, particularly if she takes the House and the Senate, if the Democrats take the House and the Senate. But yelling at me that I'm insufficiently loyal or how dare I criticize Donald Trump or whatnot, when you're yelling at your radio show host for telling you truth that you don't want to hear, or you're yelling at the voters that they need to fall in line, you're losing. You do understand that, correct? You're admitting you're losing, and that's where this comes from. Every 4 years, our side goes through a panic that we thought we could win, and now we're going to lose, and it's everybody's fault except the candidates. What's so funny is how far removed from Mitt Romney we are, that pretty much all of you hate Mitt Romney now. And in 2012, I was the one criticizing Mitt Romney, and many of you were criticizing me for criticizing Mitt Romney. And now I've said nice things about him, and those of you who refused to let me say my piece in 2012 are now like, I can't believe you'd say anything nice about that guy. 8 years removed, if Donald Trump does somehow blow this election, a very winnable election, you'll all be saying terrible things about him. And if I say anything nice, you'll be attacking me. This is the routine we go through. Here's the reality. It is August 19th, 2024. The election is not until November. This is a very winnable election. You don't have to believe me. I mean, this is David Axelrod on CNN.
She has made extraordinary progress. We were all in Milwaukee a month ago, and, you know, there was euphoria there and a sense that this race was over, that they were going to win by a landslide, perhaps sweep in big majorities in the House and Senate. And things have changed dramatically. But this is still a very competitive race. If the election were today, I'm not sure who would win. And I think it may well be President Trump, because it's an electoral college fight.
Right.
And in those battleground states.
Yeah, we were looking at national numbers
right
at the top of this program. That's, I mean, it's misleading.
And I've said,
yes, in the electoral college, it's still Donald Trump's race to lose. The popular vote doesn't matter. It's the electoral college, and he's still doing well in the electoral college. It doesn't really help Donald Trump that so many of his supporters are now angry at other Trump supporters, that they're not sufficiently loyal. You know, so on Friday, I pointed out that this election is going to come down to 50,000 to 100,000 people. But the data shows, and by the way, this isn't just the public opinion polling. You talk to the Trump campaign, you talk to the Harris campaign, they've got the data. There are about 1 million people in this country who despise both Donald Trump and Kamala Harris. The majority of them despise Trump more than Harris, and if they vote, they're going to vote for Harris. And in a 50,000 to 100,000 margin race, that's going to throw the race to Harris. So on Friday, I pointed out, you know, if these people really want a protest vote, if they really want to show that they hate him, because if they vote for Harris, it's going to be interpreted as an affirmation of her agenda. They should just sit it out. And if 1 million people sit out the race, that's a demographic up for grabs. What do we have to do to get them? Well, not have nut jobs and angry people for candidates. Had an old man say, I've got to call the Tulsa station you're on and tell them to take you off there. And I got to call all your advertisers and tell them to stop doing business with you. You're organizing a protest vote against Donald Trump. It's like way to miss the point, genius. But that's the period we're in. And it's not a good sign. 4 weeks ago, it was the Democrats. Their nerves were frayed. They were convinced they were going to lose, and the Republicans were jubilant. And now, 4 weeks later, the Democrats are the ones who are united and jubilant, and the Republicans are the ones who've got to burn the witches and conduct the Inquisition for insufficient loyalty to Donald Trump. It's like the Dan Orlovsky situation. If you felt like you were advancing, you wouldn't be so willing to burn bridges with someone who's on your side, who operates differently from you because of the world in which he lives. But you feel culturally embattled, and anyone who raises their head, speaks, and then ducks is insufficiently loyal to your side, even though he's one of you. And all you've done is you've managed to alienate other people who might speak up. In the same way, the people on the right now who are freaked out about Donald Trump's chances, they can't bring themselves to blame him. It would be some level of insufficient loyalty. But the fact of the matter is, if Donald Trump loses the election in November, he lost it. You didn't lose it, and I didn't lose it. He needs us. We don't necessarily need him. We're the voters. He's got to persuade us. And yelling at the voters that they're insufficiently loyal or shouldn't criticize, I mean, first of all, that's not who I am. I criticize everybody. I hate them all. But more importantly, it's actually a troubling sign of where your psyche is right now, that many of you, particularly older voters, really do believe it's this or communism that becomes the boy who cried wolf, like the Democrats every time saying, if you elect this president, if you elect this Republican, it's racism. Racism for the Democrats is communism for the Republicans, and it doesn't really persuade anyone. You know what's going to persuade people? You know the most important message that you can convey to people who may not like Donald Trump, and that Trump himself can convey, is not that it's going to be Trump or communism, but that it's going to be Trump or the very same people who wrecked the economy. The number one issue is immigration. They wrecked the border. The number two issue is the economy. 60% of Americans believe Donald Trump would be better at fixing the economy than Kamala Harris. Sounds like maybe that should be the message instead of loyalty tests and screaming about communism. If you want to win the election, don't yell at me. Tell Trump. It's the economy, stupid.
Want to be on the show?
Hello?
I love your show.
Call Eric now at 877-973-7425.
Welcome back. It is Eric Erickson here. The phone number 877-973-7425. Got an email from a listener. He says, don't disagree with you about Dan Orlovsky's position, but at what point do we remember the quote, all it takes for evil to prosper is for good men to do nothing? Sorry, not the exact quote. I won't villainize anyone, especially Dan, But if good men don't stand up, evil will have free reign. But I know we win in the end. So here's my view on Dan Orlovsky, ESPN football analyst, says girls should be in girls' sports, not boys. Deletes the tweet because clearly gets in trouble with ESPN, says it doesn't represent the views of his employer, so he's deleting the tweet, gets piled on by people on the right. I don't want a guy like that to lose his job. He did stand up and speak. Yes, did he duck afterwards? Yes. Probably under pressure from his employer, which is holding his job over his head. Would you rather him be the guy in that chair at ESPN? Or would you rather it be someone who actually believes boys can be in girl sports? That ultimately is the question here now, is you may not like that he deleted his tweet, but the fact that he spoke up to begin with should mean something to you. You're not in his position. You don't have as much on the line as him probably. So now the question is, are you that mad at him for deleting his tweet? You don't care what happens to him, and you would be fine with ESPN now replacing him with someone who disagrees with him? Or do you want a guy like Dan Orlovsky in that chair? I personally want people who share my worldview in those chairs. I want Dan Orlovsky to be the NFL guy at ESPN, one, because he seems like a good dude, and two, we know what he believes, whether he has a tweet up or not. And also now all this reaction to him has done is discourage other people from ever saying anything. You want good men to stand up and say something. You can't beat up the good men who do, even if they have to delete their tweets. He's still going to be in the chair. Now he's got a target on his back, and it's unfortunate that both sides are firing at him. When you know now where he stands, you should probably have his back. But that's just me. Also, I do want to meet the guy. Seems like a nice guy. Between bank collapses, and I don't know if you heard this, Austin Goolsbee was on TV this morning saying maybe the Fed won't cut interest rates in September. You don't know what's going to happen, but Swiss America has been the trusted leader in precious metals for 40 years. They've been warning people about a secret war on cash. If you're interested in safeguarding your hard-earned cash from the secret war, you need to listen. You need their free report, rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau. Swiss America can educate you on protecting your assets. They've got this report, the secret war on cash. It takes less than 15 minutes to read. It talks about how the government monitors your cash. And by the way, it includes digital forms of currency. You think you, by spending cash, they can't track you? Well, they can in many ways. You can get this free report by calling or texting 800-289-2646. The all-out war on cash, including digital forms of currency, is growing. So get and read the secret war on cash report. It's completely free to you guys. All you have to do is mention my name, Eric. When you call or text 800-289-2646, get the free report by calling or texting my name, Eric, E-R-I-C-K, to 800-289-2646. That's 800-289-2646. Message and data rates may apply.
He's got the courage to tell you the truth, because the truth is what matters. You're listening to The Eric Erickson Show.
Greetings, conversationalists. Welcome. It is Eric Erickson here. The phone number is 877-973-7425. Should you wish to be on the program, always happy to have you. In fact, let me start with Richard's phone call here. Richard, welcome to the show. How are you?
Eric, happy to be with you. I got the opportunity to see both campaigns up close this week, or last week, in Pennsylvania. This isn't a political endorsement in any way, just an observation. Trump's team is focused, knows the job that's at hand, and is always on it, and so is the candidate. Harris's team came off as wanting to just be out there on the campaign, have the fun, shake hands, see the people, listen to the music, and even the candidates come off the plane just smiling and happy. It's like they want the experience of the campaign, but they're not ready to do the work when they win, if they win.
You know, that's a great point. In fact, on her website, there's not a policy tab. There are no policies. You go to Donald Trump's campaign, he's got detailed policies of how he wants to make America great again. Kamala Harris has absolutely nothing on her website. And when she has opened her mouth, it's not working for her. I am rarely at this point shocked by the way the media treats the Democrats. The biases for the Democrats in the press is overwhelming, but I actually am stunned by the media coverage of Kamala Harris's economic vision for the country. I mean, listen, again, I will tell you, I think it is not helpful for the GOP to just scream communism, because it's like when the Democrats scream racism. You've been doing this for so long, people tune out. But when you actually do start talking about it's the economy, we can't let these people be in charge, she clearly has no clue. I think it stands out. I mean, listen to this is the Jay Clayton. He was the former chairman of the Securities and Exchange Commission. Now, he's a partisan. He was appointed by Donald Trump. But this is conversation on CNBC. Let's begin there.
Here's what I think the right message is, and why I expect that the Trump message is going to be more appealing when you look at it closely, which is, where does growth come from? Growth can come from a couple of things. Energy. If we have lower energy costs, that's going to reduce, you know, the impact on consumers. It's also going to foster growth. If we continue to be tech leaders, when we're tech leaders, we get the benefit of growth around the globe. We only have 360 million people. There's 8 billion people in the world. When they get hooked in to a digital economy, we all benefit greatly. Capital allocation. We're better at allocating capital than anybody else in the world. 4% of the world population, we allocate over 50% of the world's capital. Focus on those things and competence in government. That's how you get real growth. That's how you get real wage growth for the people in the middle 80% of the economy.
Yeah.
This idea that you're going to go out and sort of say some prices are good and some prices are bad,
right,
it's lunacy.
But
now, that's the conversation on CNBC. But you can say, well, Erickson, that guy was a Trump appointee. Yes. So here's Peter Baker, who he and his wife, virulently anti-Trump, wrote a book very critical of Donald Trump. This is Peter Baker on MSNBC.
Or anything, that she's all been about these feel-good rallies. So they wanted to be able to say, we do a plan, we've now outlined it, we've rolled it out. But I think they understand that that's probably not where this election is going to be fought out, right? That the generational change argument that she's making is probably the more powerful one, that the, you know, reminding voters who didn't like Trump in 2020 of why they might not like him in 2024 is critical to her winning. And that the specifics of the economic plan, they're not going to win the economic argument against Trump, because people aren't feeling it in their lives, even though the statistics are pretty good right now in terms of inflation, unemployment, and so forth. And so rather than wage the battle on territory that polls show Trump is strongest, they want to wage the battle on areas where they feel like he's weakest.
So you got Peter Baker out there saying basically, stop talking about the economy, Kamala Harris. Talking about how people don't like Trump. Okay, and now David Brooks on PBS.
And David, on this matter of economic policy, the vice president is also proposing the first ever ban on price gouging for groceries. This is something I know you took particular issue with. It polls well with swing voters, but economists say the underlying reasons why prices are higher, it's a more complicated argument.
Yeah, I mean, she has some good policies in this package. I think the child tax credit is a good thing. She wants to deregulate housing so we can get more homes. But the price gouging is just, well, Catherine Rampell, the Washington Post columnist and NewsHour contributor, said it's impossible to exaggerate how bad this policy is. And I agree with that. And Catherine had a good line that if your opponent is calling you a communist, maybe don't lead with price controls. And so price controls just create shortages that create black markets. We've seen it happen in Venezuela. We've seen it happen in the Soviet Union. Price controls just don't work. What's worse about that, first, it's trying to address a problem that does not exist. Grocery prices, inflation, has been less than 1% for the past year. It's over. We had a surge, but it's over. The problem does not exist. But the real core problem is it expresses a level of economic illiteracy, which is kind of surprising in a responsible Democratic candidate. You know, the idea behind greedflation is that we had all these years of low inflation under Obama and under Bush's, and I guess people weren't greedy then. And then Biden gets in, and suddenly, magically, they all get greedy and start price gouging. And they do it at Kroger's, at Harris Teeter, at HEB. Suddenly, there's this mass of price gouging, and she thinks she can prosecute it. That's not why inflation surged. Inflation surged because we had a pandemic, which screwed up supply chains and productivity. Then the Biden administration overstimulated the economy, too many dollars chasing too few goods. Obama administration officials Larry Summer and Jason Furman said at the time, this is going to cause inflation. Lo and behold, it did. The Fed has to clamp down on growth, raising everybody's interest payments. That's what causes inflation. That's solid basic economics. Her greedflation plan is somewhere off outside of normal economics.
That's David Brooks on PBS, where lots of Democrats and very few Republicans watch. You've got him blowing up her economic plan. You've got Democrats scratching their head over her economic plan, which is why she has no policy on her campaign site. This rollout of her plan is silly. And not only that, so many members of the media trying to excuse all of this and make excuses for it. You know who they've made mad? Team Biden. This is from Axios. On the opening day of their convention, Democrats are ecstatic, giddy at how far Harris has come in the 29 days since Biden bowed out. But among some in Biden's innermost circle, there's astonishment about how instantly Harris became a celebrated, glamorous star. Some Biden stalwarts blame the press for forcing him out and now seethe at what they see as fawning coverage of Harris. You know, just last Wednesday, Joe Biden said we've beaten inflation, and on Thursday, Kamala Harris said we haven't. It's going to be an interesting juxtaposition at their convention that starts today. Tonight is going to be Joe Biden and Jill Biden's night. Jill will introduce Joe, who will speak. They're bookending the convention. Joe tonight, Kamala on Thursday. They're putting him as far away as possible, and then he's leaving. He's not staying at the convention. Oftentimes, the presidents and former presidents will go to the conventions, and they'll make a show of it over several days. I doubt we'll see Joe Biden come back on Thursday night. Maybe we'll see Obama. We're going to see the Clintons there. We're going to see the Obamas there. At some point, Jason Carter is going to speak for Jimmy Carter, his grandson, who's trying to get back into politics in Georgia. So you're going to see a rollout of Democratic elite. But after tonight, you're not going to see Joe Biden. They're sending him out to the glue factory. It's over for Joe Biden. You may never see the man again. It's all going to be about Kamala Harris all the time. But in her first major policy rollout, it's notable that even the Democrats are having a hard time keeping their mouths shut about how bad it is. And if Trump can just focus on the economy and they get Kamala Harris speaking, I mean, this is Abby Phillips on CNN. Listen to this conversation with Abby Phillips on CNN.
Yet.
She has engaged.
She's not. She has not engaged.
Just became our nominee.
In pressing interactions on anything, really.
Well, no, that's not true. Actually, I mean, that's absolutely.
That's going to be an issue.
That's not an issue.
Okay, that's Bakari Sellers trying to talk over the host. Saying, that's not really true. That's not true. That's not true. That's not true. That's not true. And Abby was like, she's not talking to the press. She's not answering any questions. She's not. I don't know if y'all saw the clip. I don't have it immediately available, but she talked to a football team and told them even if they lose, they're still undefeated. That's not how this works. And that's the problem. Every time, listen, the Democrats right now, their strategy is to remind people that they voted against Donald Trump in 2020 because they were exhausted by the mean tweets and they didn't particularly like him. And they didn't think he was a steady hand, and they wanted to return to normalcy. But every single time Kamala Harris opens her mouth, she reminds people she's not a return to normalcy, and we don't like her either. And she's not that bright. Say what you will about Donald Trump, and I've said enough. The boomers send me hate mail. Fact of the matter is, Donald Trump has run a successful business. He has. Now, Democrats tried their mightiest to vilify it and condemn the business, but Donald Trump owns a successful business. He's done something with his life in the private sector. Kamala Harris has done nothing except live off the government dole. And when she comes time to trot out economic policies, she screws them up. Now, let's go back to a Republican here, Ron Johnson. He is not just a Republican senator, but he's also a very successful businessman from Wisconsin.
And I've been saying this on your program for years, that we have a media that is leftist itself. They are corrupt. They will provide no scrutiny, no accountability to the insanity of her economic policy. They won't point out the fact that she had a plan that resulted in your dollar worth only 83 cents, prices going up 20%. You know, even Kamala Harris is admitting the price is too high, that the cost of bread is up 50%. Well, that happened on her watch. So now what they'll report is now she's got a plan to stabilize prices or bring them down. And they'll do it without really evaluating it, without really providing it kind of scrutiny. And that's the problem that Donald Trump is up against. He's up against the media. He's not really running against Kamala Harris.
Yeah. As I said the other day, and thank you, Ron Johnson, for parroting me, that we got to run against the media, not just the Democrats here. But what's remarkable here, and I play that Ron Johnson clip here because I find it notable that even members of the press could not help but ridicule Kamala Harris's economic plan on price controls. That's just how bad it is. Oh, and by the way, they've trotted out the Democratic platform today. They agreed to it back in July, which makes it very funny because they've never amended it. So instead of saying Kamala Harris's presidency, it says Joe Biden's second term, which is something, again, that is an opening for the Trump campaign to do instead of, I don't know, doing this.
I mean, Time Magazine, think of this. Time Magazine doesn't have a picture of her. They have this unbelievable artist drawing her. And I said, is that Sophia Loren? I couldn't. Who might that be? Is that Elizabeth Taylor? They say she was a beautiful woman. Who is it so beautiful drawing? It's a drawing. They took a lot of pictures. It didn't work out, so they hired a sketch artist. I said, I'm sure, oh, they must be celebrating the great life and times of the magnificently beautiful Sophia Loren.
I want to say I'm more attractive than color. Look, it's a very, very funny line. But every moment spent calling her ugly is a moment spent not calling her economic plan ugly, and probably better time spent there. Still, as much as the media is outraged by it, it was kind of funny. Although I have to say, he's dating himself with his references to Elizabeth Taylor and Sophia Loren. That, yes, dating yourself there. Gal Gadot, that's what you want to do, because that'll also rile up the Hamas supporters, Mr. President. Now, I got to tell you about the Eden Pure Thunderstorm. You can get three of them for less than $200. You save $200 and you wipe out odors. You go to EdenPureDeals.com and you put in discount code ERIC3, E-R-I-C-K-3. Now, what is the Eden Pure Thunderstorm? It's an air purifier. So it gets rid of dust. It gets rid of pollen. It uses electrostatic plates. You don't have to get a filter subscription. You can just wipe it out on occasion. But where it shines, the way I use it, it is an odor eliminator. So you got a nursery, you got a newborn. Buddy of mine had a baby the other day, got a newborn and dirty diapers. The Eden Pure Thunderstorm will wipe out the dirty diaper odors. Got a pet litter box for a cat, wipes out those odors. Wet dog, wipes out those odors. Fry in the kitchen and you don't have an exhaust vent, wipes out those odors. Got a rental car, someone's been smoking in it, wipes out those odors. It just works, y'all. You can plug it in with a USB cord. You can plug it into the wall. EdenPureDeals.com. You can get three of them for less than $200. You save $200. You go to EdenPureDeals.com, EdenPureDeals.com, and put in the discount code right on the front page, ERIC3, E-R-I-C-K-3, no space, ERIC3, at EdenPureDeals.com.
When the world seems crazy, he'll keep you sane. It's the Eric Erickson Show. Want to be on the show? Come on, be on the show. Call Eric now at 877-973-7425.
Greetings. Welcome. It's Eric Erickson. The phone number is 877-973-7425. If you want to be on the program, this hour of the program is brought to you by First Liberty Building and Loan. If you're building a building, buying a building, you need a heavy equipment loan, First Liberty, they can help you. They make their own lending decisions. First Liberty Building and Loan has been helping businesses grow since the 90s. Unlike your bank, where your lender may change every other week, at First Liberty, it's the same family, the Frost family, good people, been there the whole time. They want to help your business if they can. FirstLibertyGA.com. Spend 10 minutes with them. See if they're a fit for you, you for them. FirstLibertyGA.com. Y'all, to answer the questions and the emails I've gotten, yes, we moved our daughter into the dorm on Friday. I did not cry. My wife was a little emotional on Friday night when she went to bed and the room was empty. I went in and thought, good Lord, do we need an excavator to clean this place out? She hadn't cleaned a room in God knows how long. But nonetheless, it's been hard to miss her because, let's see, just show you. Well, I won't show you. I'll just note that on my phone. See, already today, got one call from this morning. One, two, three calls on Sunday. One, two, three, four, five, six calls on Saturday. She's come by. She's dropped off clothes. I mean, she's like 15 minutes from the house. So now on Friday, we moved her into the dorm and we left. And then Friday night, I got a little alert. She'd used the Apple Card that's tied to my account at the grocery store across the street from her house. I said, I bet she's coming over here. So we turned off all the lights and we hid. And she came wandering through the house trying to find us, and she couldn't find us. And you could tell she was starting to freak out a little bit because the side door was unlocked. The dog was there and nobody was home. We finally jumped out and scared the mess out of her. But she's having a good time. Now, the punchline of all of this moving into the dorm stuff is I didn't go over until 3. I had to go get my son from school. So we got there about 3:30. And she said that at first, like, people on campus were coming by. Like, the advisors were coming by. The admissions office, like, is Mr. Erickson here? One of the vice presidents for the university came by. Is Mr. Erickson here? And she says, by about before I got there, 2:30, 3 o'clock, word had clearly gotten out. It was a bunch of middle-aged men and women who were coming by wanting to know if I was in the room. And I was like, ah, no, it's because I was an alumnus. And there, it's just that you're in this particular dorm and you're a legacy. And that's why they wanted the picture, not because I'm me, but because if my wife said, no, that is not it at all. They were coming looking for the guy on talk radio. So I have avoided the campus at my daughter's request, so as not to cause a scene around her or to get like angry hate mail from the left-wing professors. I do have to say I'm a little proud of her, though. She found out that one of the professors she was going to take wrote a very, very progressive doctoral thesis and wanted nothing to do with it. So she dropped that particular class because she didn't want a woke professor. So good for her. Head on her shoulders. She'll be fine. But thanks for all the prayers and well wishes. Now if she would just, like, stop coming home every 5 minutes.